Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 225. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
It's been a while. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
We've had to miss a couple episodes due to illness. And I'm still sick here, but it's time to do our end of the year episodes. So we're going to do it. Hopefully I make it to the end.
It would be awkward if you didn't. So.
let's just jump into it, Chris. So, in this episode, in episode 225, like usual, we're gonna do our awards for different movies. So, and then we'll be back next week with our top 10 lists. But let's get started with the awards.
All right.
Hopefully, my voice does not give out on me. If it does, Chris, you're taking over. But first up, I'm just going to go down my list. Best actor, what do you got, Chris?
Best, well, we're just kicking it off with the big ones, aren't we? I have Taron Egerton. Probably an interesting choice, huh?
for
Rocket Man. Unlike most biopics, I don't think that he's trying to do a mimicry of Elton John. Like he's just acting, acting out the role of what happens to be Elton John. But he's not it's not a mimicky type performance. I didn't feel
he looks like him a little bit, but
yeah, a little bit. No. Definitely a very a younger version of him, for sure. And that helped sell it for me. It wasn't earlier in the year I watched The Dirt, which was the Motley Crue kind of biopic, and everybody there seemed like they were playing parody versions of the guys in Motley Crue, where here it just felt natural. So it took me a little while to come up with who I would go with for best actor, but that's kind of what I came out with. So.
I didn't like that movie, but he was good in it, and I don't see he won't get that recognition a lot of other places, I don't think. So
he was nominated for a Golden Globe for it.
Was he?
But, yeah.
He's good. He should be in more stuff too. Besides,
Yeah, we saw him in what are the
Kingsman movies,
the Kingsman stuff. But I have outside of this, I haven't really seen him in stuff. And this kind of shows that he has some range to him. He's a better actor than kind of what you see in the Kingsman, which isn't bad. But he obviously has a bright future ahead of him.
Well. My best actor choice will get recognition elsewhere, probably everywhere. My choice for best actor is Adam Driver in Marriage Story, which I've always thought Adam Driver's an interesting actor, but in Marriage Story, he and Scarlett Johansson really got to show their chops. And, there's a scene going around on Twitter and stuff that everyone's making fun of, but it's also the big acting scene between them that will be shown in award shows and stuff. I think that scene is great, but it's easy to make fun of it when you take it outside of the context of a 2-hour movie that builds up to it,
Right.
But outside of that big scene, he's fantastic throughout it. Scarlett Johansson as well is really good. It's one of those movies where it's just watching the performances of everyone in it is kind of the treat of the movie. But I think Adam Driver, he stands out in a cast full of people that are really, really good in Marriage Story. So nice. I think that guy, I'm sorry, what's that?
That's one I haven't gotten into yet, but for good things.
I think that Adam Driver has a bright future. They might put him in some of those Star Wars movies or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Best actress, Chris, who do you got?
All right. So, the person I have down here for best actress, I don't have a specific role that she played. She actually appeared in two movies that I really liked this year. And that's Florence Pugh, who was in she was in Midsummer as the lead there, and she was also in Fighting With My Family as the lead, playing in that. She was kind of, you know, it's playing a biopic role. I loved her in both things. I will follow her anywhere now. Like anything that they put her in, I am there. Day one. Actually, I was very excited when I saw the trailer for the Black Widow movie, and she is in that. So,
yeah.
Yep. It's like, yeah, I'm on board for that. So yeah, really enjoyed her on screen this year. I'll watch her in anything.
This was a tough one for me. I really, really like Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story. She's great in it. But I had to go with my heart, and my heart said Florence Pugh in Midsummer. Kind of echoing what you said, I think she's really great in Fighting With My Family too, but I just kind of fell in love with her in Midsummer. I think that's part of it. I think it's just like I have a crush on her as well.
Like, very well could be.
But I mean, that's, you know, you have to also give her credit to what she does. And I think in Midsummer, it's like just a perfect performance.
Yeah.
She's asked to kind of deal with a lot of stuff. You know, she's like going through grief. She's tripping on shrooms.
She's very,
becoming the
very,
May Queen.
She's a very nuanced character there. And
yeah.
Going on. She has to show a lot of different emotion throughout that. And she does a great job.
Yeah. She's just really, yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on in that movie. She's a lot she has to do. And through it all, I'm like sitting there falling in love with her. So I'm like, she's been high on the list all along, and she beat out Scarlett Johansson for Best Actress for me. So that's one category you and I are in agreement on there.
I don't think we're going to have a ton. But,
well, let's see. Best Supporting Actor, Chris.
I have Brad Pitt from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as Cliff Booth. Again, it's just like it's a performance that overtakes the movie.
Have you watched this movie again?
No, but yeah, like,
dude, I tell you what. Go ahead.
Like that performance is something that has stuck with me since I saw it over the summer. Like, it's just such a fun role. That and he does it perfectly. He exudes the cool guy demeanor, and it's perfect.
He's awesome in it. He's gonna come up in this again a bunch. And that movie is, I bought it recently, and I'm happy I did because it's one of those movies you could kind of just rewatch. It's fun to hang out with. It's a movie I'm happy that, even though like the first time I saw it, I'm like, I don't know if it's a 5-star movie, but I'm gonna give it 5 stars. It's one of those ones where I'm like, thank God I did, because that was the right answer. But unfortunately for Brad Pitt, he's not my choice. My choice for Best Supporting Actor is Joe Pesci in The Irishman. Now, one thing that's great about Pesci and The Irishman is he hasn't been around in a long, long time. Like, the dude kind of, like, retired from acting, so it's great to see him again, just for one.
Right.
But for two, he gives a performance that's, like, the inverse of what you would expect from him if you've seen Goodfellas or Casino. In those films, he's very loudmouthed, very brash, very violent. Quick to lash out, you say the wrong thing, he'll be like, how the fuck am I funny? He'll grab a pen and start stabbing your throat out. In The Irishman, Pesci is like measured, calculated, quiet. He's a very like very quiet, laid back guy, and it's a very like, maybe not laid back, but like just measured and calculated performance. And, you know, he never goes into fits of rage. He never performs acts of violence. But he could just say a little thing like, you know, I don't know, I think that guy's a problem. And it's like, we'll send chills down you, because you're like, this guy, like, you know, orders hits like he's ordering off a menu. But he does it very subtle. He never shows any anger. He never exactly says what he wants you to do. But you know, the message is clear. Just fantastic performance from him. And like I said, it's good to see him again. I really, really hope he gets nominated for some awards and wins some of them.
Nice.
Let's move along. Best Supporting Actress.
This one was tough for me. Not because mostly because I just couldn't find like a particular role that really stood out for me in the supporting actress realm. Like I liked a lot of the lead actresses this year, but supporting was a little bit tough. But one that came back to me, it was one we haven't reviewed on the show because of the illnesses. So it's been within the last few weeks, but Scarlett Johansson in Jojo Rabbit as Jojo's mom is fantastic. Like she is funny. She's there's a lot of depth to her performance, which is like she is the mom of like this like Hitler youth, like indoctrinated Hitler youth, and she is part of the resistance. And so she's like trying to do the best for her son, while also kind of being like subverting the Nazi regime as best she can. And she just gives this really detailed and fine performance throughout it all. And it's not a huge performance. She only has like maybe like five or six scenes in the whole movie. But it's one that was like, yeah, like she was excellent in this. And there's one scene in particular, where she actually, like, she gets angry at Jojo and Jojo kind of lashes out and says he wants his dad, who is away fighting somewhere. And she does this whole like dual monologue where she's playing the mom and the dad back and forth. And it's just, it's a great scene. So Scarlett Johansson from Jojo Rabbit.
I heard she's good in it. Wait till you see her in Marriage Story. She's fantastic. Yeah. My choice though is Jennifer Lopez in Hustlers. I don't know. She's just a good supporting role in that film. Like she kind of like hovers over the whole film as like the criminal mastermind that comes up with the idea of like, hey, let's drug these guys and rob them. And she's another one.
So she's not the lead in that then.
No, Constance Wu.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah, she's like the bad influence. You know what I mean?
She's the one definitely that, like, who they marketed. Emotion.
Yeah, well, it's understandable. She's
oh yeah.
She doesn't look her age.
And she's like a huge international star, so very understandable.
But the interesting thing about it too is like she's another one too where it's like she had like this movie career going and then she kind of like disappeared. She comes back, she's just as good here. So this is kind of one that stuck out for me. Like I didn't really have a lot of others that I was thinking of though. Like I was like, what was a good supporting actress role? And then she's the only one, maybe it's because I've seen it recently, but she's the only one that really kind of stuck out to me. Best Twist.
All right. So this one, another movie we haven't reviewed on the show, but it's weird because the twist is kind of revealed very early on in this movie, but there's like multiple twists in how it finally wraps up, and that movie's Knives Out. I mean, the whole movie is basically a twist, but I think its execution is just superb. I love that it like basically tells you up front, here's what it is.
Yeah.
And the entire time you're thinking like you're watching it subvert the expectations of a modern like mystery type movie because you know what's happened. And then in the end, like it has this additional twist again, that you maybe see coming, but also the execution of it is just flawless.
Yeah, my choice is Knives Out. for the same reason.
Wow, this is getting weird, Jeff.
I don't think there were a lot of like huge twists this year.
No, it was actually a hard one for me to come up with.
Like even looking back on Glass, I don't know if I would nominate anything in that as best twist or whatever, you know, like that was actually more straightforward from Shyamalan kind of.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, what I loved about Knives Out is very similar. It's the same thing that you loved, which is it gives you the information up front. Like, you know what happened. So then you're like, how could there be any twists beyond this? And then there's like a billion. So I really enjoyed that as well. Best ending, Chris.
Best ending. All right. So I have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Can't go wrong with that.
Well, and up until the ending, it's a pretty straightforward movie about movies, about acting, about Hollywood in, you know, the late 60s, the changeover of an era, really. And then, you know, Tarantino does what he does with his historical kind of approach, and he changes history, as you can do as a filmmaker, as a storyteller. He creates an ending that is different from what actually happened. And it is so over the top and absurd that I love it. Like it's, I think up until that point, like the movie is, I think it's a very good movie throughout, but the ending just elevates it for me. And it's kind of stuck with me.
The funny thing is like, I remember you didn't totally love the ending the first time you saw it.
I didn't.
Or you didn't love the changes.
Cause like, I mean, there is this like sense that like, you know, going back to like Inglourious Basterds or something like that, he's playing with history in the way they kill Hitler, but it's kind of, I don't know. It's maybe it's not something that was as close. Like, but this is way closer. I mean, I was still not born. I was still, you know, 10 years from being born when all this took place, but it just feels more recent, because like, you know, Manson's still alive, or, you know, like that, those people, like they still come up every once in a while in the news. It's still very much a cultural thing, but in terms of like the actual execution of it, it's like, this is absurd. and it changes the movie from being this straight kind of story of that era to something different. So yeah, I definitely have changed on my opinion of the ending a bit since I saw it in July.
Dude, it's a movie that the more you watch it, the more you're gonna love it. I'm telling you. But unfortunately for it, there was one ending I liked more than it this year. And that was The Irishman. So The Irishman is basically the story of this guy. He's like a union truck driver, you know, Robert De Niro. He meets a mobster, becomes friends with a mobster. That's played by Joe Pesci. And through that friendship and also kind of working for that guy, he ends up becoming friends and kind of working for Jimmy Hoffa and becomes very good friends with him for like 30 years. And the movie reaches this crux where at some point, Robert De Niro, his one friend Joe Pesci, asks him or tells him to kill his other very good friend, Jimmy Hoffa. And so the ending of that movie is, you know, Robert De Niro kills, he does his job and he kills Jimmy Hoffa. And then The Irishman does something that, like, none of these movies do. It spends a half hour after that showing you how it destroyed his life. Like, and it goes, you know, from the moment he did it till he's a very old man in a nursing home. And it spends a half hour getting there and showing how his daughter stopped talking to him and he loses contact with his family and his body starts falling apart and all this stuff. And then it just reaches this ending of, you know, at the very end where he's just an old, frail old man who's on the verge of death. And, you know, the kind of idea is like, that's where we're all going to be you know, whether you get, you know, you get shot in the head in your prime or you live another 30 years beyond that, you're going to, we're all going to reach that point where the end is coming. And just perfectly done ending. Like, I remember watching it for the first time with my girlfriend, and they get to this one shot where he's like, you know, Priest is visiting with him, and the priest is about to leave his room, and De Niro's like, could you leave the door open a little bit, like, a, you know, just a little bit open? And then they show a shot of, like, you know, him, like, you see in through the door, and you see De Niro, like, sitting there in his wheelchair in the room. And as we're watching it, I said to my girlfriend, I was like, that would be a perfect final shot for this movie. And as right as I said that, it went black and said, directed by Martin Scorsese. I was like, holy fuck, perfect ending. So I love the end of The Irishman. I've watched the whole film twice now, but I've watched the ending like four times, like the last half hour, like four times. It's weird. It's a super long movie, but you really don't feel it once it gets going. Moving along. Best villain, Chris.
I think I'm going to say this a lot over the course of this year. This has been a rough year for like things that we normally have like a plethora of. I struggled with this one a little bit, but I did finally come down to Greta Hedegg from Greta, the old lonely woman who kidnaps like nice like people that bring her handbag back, and she befriends them and stalks them and then ultimately kidnaps them. She's a top-notch villain, like just excellently executed.
Yes, and it's a good movie that I remember, at least, but I feel like a lot of people didn't see even. My choice, Chris, I was leaning towards The Tethered from Us, but like, I don't think I loved Us as much as I thought. Like, I watched it again, and I was just like, it's okay. And which is funny, because the movie I'm choosing from here is also like, the movie I'm choosing from is stupid, but my villain, Chris, is Olivia Spencer in Ma, which... Okay. The movie's dumb. It's cheesy, yeah, but she's great in it. Like, she's really fun in it. It's like a very memorable villain. It's like a memorable, like, stereotype. You know, I can see people like years from now being like, "Oh, that bitch is crazy." She's like, "Ma," you know, whatever. Yeah, and Olivia Spencer just goes for it in this movie. So
she's a lot of fun in it.
Yeah, like the movie's cheesy. It's dumb. I think it will kind of persist because of that. And she's having a lot of fun in it.
Nice.
Best tearjerker.
Another one to struggle with here, but Brittany Runs a Marathon was one that, like, it's not necessarily like, you know, oh, you're going to cry over it, but there is this like nice realization moment. And ultimately her succeeding is it's an emotional scene, like, and it's something that does kind of get you moving. So yeah.
I haven't seen it. It's on Prime now, but I don't know, I just don't really whatever for a reason. My best tearjerker excuse me, is Knock Down the House. That's a documentary that came out on Netflix earlier this year about a bunch of regular people kind of running for the U.S. House of Representatives back in the midterms, including AOC being one of them. And like, I think I cried like a couple times near the end of this movie. Like, first off, spoilers, but nobody running wins except for AOC. So like, everyone else that you're following through the whole movie loses. And, you know, one of them was this lady who was running because her daughter died because she didn't have health insurance. And when she loses, it's pretty devastating. Like, it hurts. When AOC wins, that's a very happy moment. You might have some happy tears there. But then at the very end, like, she goes to Washington and she tells the story about how her dad took her there when she was really little. And I'm going to start choking up trying to tell this. Her dad took her to Washington when she was very little, and he told her, you know, this belongs to all of us. It doesn't belong to them. It belongs to us. That part gets me every time. Even talking about it gets me a little teared up. So that's my best tearjerker. And I swear it's not just because I'm a liberal or whatever. It's pretty powerful within the film.
Nice.
Best summer movie, Chris.
All right. So the movie I picked for best summer movie did not come out during the summer. Came out.
It should have.
It came out in February. It's The Wandering Earth, which is the big budget Chinese sci-fi movie that it's on Netflix now. It's an excellent sci-fi, big budget, fun blockbuster type movie. It is totally a movie that I think belonged in the summer. And if this were an American made film, it would have been in the summer and it would have been like done amazing money. Instead it kind of just like kind of languished here and mostly came out on Netflix. I did see it in the theater. I had to drive out to go see it. And I honestly, if you watch it, I would recommend watching it with the English dub off, watch it in the original Chinese with subtitles. Because I watched a little bit of it with the dub, and the dub is terrible. but it's such a fun movie. Top-notch sci-fi. Top-notch big-budget blockbuster.
Yeah, I've heard good things, not just from you. So I've been meaning to see that. Well, I did not cheat, and I have no qualms about my choice. A summer movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Just a fun, like, almost comedy, basically. I mean, the movie is basically a comedy about two friends hanging out. It's a friendship movie with a happy ending for the friends.
Yeah.
And it was just so cool to see, like, this big fucking Tarantino film, him doing whatever the fuck he want. It comes out during the summer. It's a blast. People are making memes out of it and joking about it on Twitter still. And not only all of that, but it was a big hit. It was a big hit for a summer film and did great business, amazingly. So that is my choice.
Nice.
Next category. This is a tough one. Best TV show. And before I even go to you on this, let me just tee you up with some of the stuff that came out this year, man.
Mm-hmm.
True Detective Season 3, Black Mirror, The Last Drive-In, Fleabag, Chernobyl, When They See Us, Succession, Game of Thrones, Euphoria, Stranger Things, The Mandalorian, Russian Doll, Watchmen. That's probably just to name a few. What a spectacular year for TV.
Yeah, it's been great.
What do you think, Chris?
I do think it's been a great a year for TV. I did not get to see most of that for various reasons.
Dude, there's so much good. You can't go wrong with almost anything I named.
Right. Two that I did see, and I kind of have cheating here again. I have two listed here. Chernobyl is my hands down choice. Fantastic performances, excellent story, awesome. Like, I love the content of it. I've always been interested in the Chernobyl disaster. It is an amazing 5-episode miniseries. Go watch it. The other one, and this is more of a fun TV show, but it has rekindled my kind of love for episodic weekly television, and that's The Mandalorian.
Bounty Law. Star Wars edition.
I like that it's like, look, I know there's a lot of people out there saying they wish it was more kind of like tied together But no,
it's Bounty Law. It's Bounty Law. It's this week on Bounty Law. The bounty, you know what I mean? That's what it is.
I just kind of like that. It's like these separate adventures, like each time. And yeah, like there's a very loose thread tying everything together with a little baby Yoda. Yeah. But I just every week it's like, what are they going to do? And I don't need to, like, you could watch any of those episodes and be fine. Yeah. But it's also something like I'm enjoying the discourse around it. Like every week there's people to talk to about the new episode. People are excited about TV again. And it's something that, like, you know, tons of people were excited about Stranger Things season 3, but the discourse over that ended in like 4 days. Everybody moved on to whatever the fuck was next. And The Mandalorian has like ruled the internet for the last 6 weeks.
I do think if they released it all at once, no one would be talking about it anymore.
We would be done talking about it. It'd be like, that was really cool. When season 2 coming out, because that's all I care about now. Like, we're done. But instead, Disney has, you know, rekindled my love of like weekly television must see, because I want to talk about it with somebody.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, it's not, it's certainly not Chernobyl level. Like, it's a goofy Star Wars show. It gets the Star Wars stuff right. It's fun, but it's not serious television, but it's fun television.
I love it as like this throwback to kind of 90s television, where it was just, if you tuned in that week or didn't matter. They're all kind of their own self-contained adventures.
Yep.
Like, you know, you could kind of half watch it. It doesn't matter. I really enjoyed this last one, which I know a lot of people said like the show started stronger than it is, but like,
I really love this one.
So Bill good. Burr running around, talking shit.
He was great.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. And I definitely look more forward to the Imagineering story on there, but that's just ended. Actually, oh no, the Mandalorian has like 2 more, doesn't it?
Yeah, the 7th episode actually comes out probably when we finish recording, it'll be available. And then there's not an episode again until next Friday. So it's like a 10-day gap.
My problem is this.
Space it out a little bit.
My problem with Disney Plus is like, the Imagineering story's done. The Mandalorian's almost over. I have it for free for a year, but if I didn't, I would probably cancel after that. Like, I don't know what else I'm doing with it. But yeah, I always, every Friday night lately, it's been the Imagineering story is like, you know, it's like my meal. Like, it's a very important hour of serious television, and then a half hour of dessert, which is The Mandalorian, which is just, it's usually about a half hour long too. That's another thing I love about it.
It's
just kind of perfect for what it is.
Great. You know?
But it's not my choice. My best TV, since you're cheating, I'm going to cheat too, because I had a really hard time narrowing it down here. And mine are both the 2 HBO shows, Euphoria and Succession. Euphoria is just like phenomenal, next level filmmaking. It reminds me a lot of like early Paul Thomas Anderson. Crazy, intense high school drama. great lead performance by, I'm drawing a blank on her name.
Zendaya. Right,
by Zendaya, but everyone in the cast is really good. It's just like every kind of aspect of that show is kind of amazing. And it could get really intense at points. It started to seem like it was going into more of like real intense, like Breaking Bad type territory, and then it pulled back at the end. I actually found the finale like less satisfying than some of the episodes before it, but just all around, I felt like that was such an underappreciated show this summer. And then Succession is a show about rich people who are assholes, who are like trying to fight for control of, you know, the patriarch's like ownership of the company, because eventually he's going to retire or die. That's kind of the premise of Succession.
Right.
And a lot of people were like, that sounds shitty, and why would you get into that? I think a great way someone described it on Twitter is it's Game of Thrones and SUVs. Like, that kind of explains to you, like, the appeal of it. It's people vying for power. And it had a really good second season, but my lord, Succession ended on one hell of a mic drop. Like, one of the best endings to a season I've ever seen. I can't wait to see where it goes next. So, I guess I don't have to choose. That's my best TV is Euphoria and Succession, and you said Mandalorian and
Chernobyl.
Chernobyl, yeah. Chernobyl is great, too. Don't get me wrong. It's just, again, this year has been fucking bonkers for TV. I said up until about a couple weeks ago, it's been kind of a weak movie year, but now that I think about it, it's like, well, I think I got two of my favorite films of the decade this year, so everything kind of turned out okay. All right. Excuse me. You're going to hear a lot of and dying throughout this. Best action scene.
All right. So my best summer movie was The Wandering Earth, and the best action scene for me comes from that movie. It's kind of a long sequence, but I think a few years ago we awarded like Fast Five that chase sequence, which is like 45 minutes long, the bank heist. Similar with this, it's like the last half hour of this movie is this kind of final mission sequence as they're trying to fire off the Earth engines and propel us away from the planet we're about to crash into. It's the best of when Michael Bay was not fucking insane. So like think The Rock and like that's like,
yeah,
there's an over the topness to it, but it's restrained in a way that makes it like fun and believable.
Yeah.
And it never like reaches like this, like what the fuck level of stupidity that Bay's like Transformers stuff in his last four Transformers movies or whatever remain. And I haven't seen Six Underground yet, but I've heard things about that as well. But like to me, like this harkened back to like The Rock and like Bad Boys 2, where it was like it's crazy over the top action, but it's not like so over the top that it circles back and bites itself in the ass.
This is The Wandering Earth, you said?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Interesting. Mine is John Wick 3, the opening of that, where it just kind of like is a really long action sequence that kind of like, they're like, weapon shop. They're breaking down the glass in the weapon shop, grabbing knives, throwing them at each other and shit. It goes into like a horse's stable where he's like slapping horses' asses to make them kicking people. Then he grabs a horse and then they're like out and on the streets of New York on the horse. I mean, there's other scenes in John Wick 3 that would compete for this, but that was like, I'd never been a fan of the series up until John Wick 3, and then
I think I agree with you. That is the best. I think it's the best scene in the series so
and
far.
Like, it grabbed me right away, where I'm like, oh, this is going to be a blast. And we'll talk more about John Wick 3, but yeah, if I had to choose one action scene, it would be that one from that movie. And again, there's other ones in that movie that are great too, but that's the one that kind of grabbed me and said, whoa, okay, they're stepping it up. Similar vein, best gore / violence.
So mine is not from like a horror film or an action movie. It's from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that final half, not even a half hour, maybe like final 15 minutes.
Yeah.
The scene where, Cliff is on, he's on like this crazy psychedelics. He's not even sure that what he's seeing is real, but, Manson family, they invade the house and he takes them down in the most absurd way. And there's particularly this one scene where, he just like slams her face and it just caves. And oh my God, that might be the most disgusting thing I've seen in years. And it is a holy shit moment for sure.
Yeah,
I love it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, my choice for best gore violence is from the buddy hangout comedy Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah, dude, that when that violence kicks in, it is fucking insane. Smashing faces into telephones, into the mantle, fucking lighting people on fire, like, and it, God, like the whole fire,
what you call it, the flamethrower.
It's set up so perfectly, like so early on in the movie, that he gets to use it while he's fucking pissed drunk is just hilarious. Yeah, I mean, the violence is, and the other thing about the violence is because like the movie is so kind of laid back up until then, that when it just explodes in the violence like that, it made it all the more effective. Well, and a somewhat similar note, I guess, best horror movie, Chris.
Yeah, so my best horror movie doesn't really have like a lot of gore to it, which is a little strange, but it's been at the top for most of the year, along with Midsommar, and that's Us. I have watched it a couple times now. I really enjoy that film. Like, I enjoyed the comedy in it. I enjoyed the tension of the you know, the tethered, and they're chasing them. I enjoyed like the whole kind of like apocalyptic setting that this event has incurred. It is a kind of a terrifying film in that respect. So
it's interesting. Like I said, I watched it again, and it didn't really do it for me, but I've seen Us show up on a couple top 10 lists, like regular old general top 10 lists. So obviously clicked with you and others more than me. Mine is Midsommar. Nice. I think that is a meticulously crafted movie that just looks beautiful. Like, horror in the daylight is something you don't get a lot of. And, you know, on top of it being in the daylight, it just looks beautiful throughout. And then, you know, you get people start tripping, and you get in the weird, like, wavy visuals where, like, the whole mountaintop behind them starts moving near the end and shit. Just beautiful-looking movie, great movie. One of my favorite movies of the year, period. So I had to give it my favorite horror for Midsommar. Nice. On the opposite end of the spectrum, best comedy.
So my best comedy is I guess Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would probably qualify as a comedy.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm gonna go Jojo Rabbit. It's a satire that is hysterical throughout the entire movie. It is a movie that many times, what the fuck is going on here? Because it is so absurd. And I laughed throughout the entire thing. I kind of feel Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a little more drama-y. But Jojo Rabbit is definitely, it is firing on all cylinders comedic-wise.
So, some movie about the Holocaust is less drama-y than...
Yeah, okay. Like, it is straight up. It is a straight up amusing movie.
It's
like,
cracking me up.
Yes.
The subject matter of both movies, neither movie you would think would be a comedy.
Right, exactly.
I could easily choose Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for this category, and that would probably be the right choice because of how fucking quotable and hilarious it is. But I don't want to give everything to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, so. Given this one, A Dolomite Is My Name, which is a really fun movie on Netflix about someone who maybe doesn't have what it takes to make a movie saying, I'm making a movie, damn it. You know, and it's a true story. And you get Eddie Murphy back. You get Denzel Washington back. Like, you haven't seen these guys do anything really good in a long time. And it is a really fun, like, fun movie that also has, you know, some more, like, tender moments and stuff. But I wanted to give recognition to that one, so I give it best comedy.
Nice.
Coolest moment.
So same movie as what I just had for best comedy. Towards the end of that film, finally, Jojo, he kind of realizes that the imaginary Hitler in his head. Because that's so. If you've seen the trailer or the movie, you know Hitler is he's a character in the film. And he is there. He's, you know, talking to Jojo all the time, giving him advice and, you know, pep talks and stuff. But as the movie plays out, Jojo begins to realize that everything Hitler has been trying to sell him on is bullshit. And he finally makes a decision that, like, no, you're an asshole and I hate you and you fucked up everything. And he kicks Hitler out a window. And it is fucking awesome. The crowd I saw it with, which is a lot of older people, they loved it as well. It is, it's super awesome. So yep, that's my coolest moment.
Hey, kicking Hitler out of a window.
It works all the time.
My coolest moment is a small little thing, but it's fucking awesome. And that's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There's a part where, like, Tarantino kind of, like, cuts to all different, like, aspects around, all different areas around LA and shit, just as it's turning to dusk and, like, turning to night. And he just shows all the neon lights going on. I don't know why. It's a fucking cool little, like, minute and a half scene that has really no point, but it is a cool moment. So that's why I gave it to
him. If there's anything that Tarantino does, like, great, it is finding the cool in something. Like, yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood may be a little bit self-indulgent at times, and maybe this scene that you're talking about is a little bit self-indulgent.
It's awesome.
Like, but it is one of those things where it's like, this just looks cool and I can do whatever the fuck I want because it's my movie, so I'm putting it in there. And
that's
awesome.
This one's gonna be fun. Worst movie.
I have the worst movie I've seen this year. It might be the only movie I gave once. It is. No, ooh, I gave a bunch of movies one star. But this is such a giant shit show. It's not Rambo Last Blood. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought it was.
No, it's the Hulu movie that came out for April Fools called I'm Just Fucking With You. Oh my God, what a piece of shit.
I want to say one of my coworkers said, check it out.
Oh, it's so bad. I hate it every minute of it. I mean, I hated every minute of Rambo Last Blood. But there's another award for that. Yeah. So,
well, I figured you had me covered with Rambo Last Blood, so I went worst movie, Alita Battle Angel. And I'm sorry. I think you might have gave it like 3 stars or something, right? Or yeah. I remember you didn't hate it as much as me. I know that.
I did not hate it. It's like firmly in the middle of my...
The reason I'm giving it worst movie is because it's like an imitation of one of those awesome type of movies, but it's just like empty. There's nothing going on in it. And it has a stupid sport in its core. And it's just a bunch of dumb shit. Like, it just... It was bad on that level, and then to make matters worse, it for some reason became like a right wing like movie that right wingers rallied around. I think it had something to do with, like,
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You didn't know that?
I kind of like fell off the discourse of the movie. Really, yeah. I was like, you know what? This movie, I found it was fine. I did not hate it, but I also was like, it's not memorable, and it's never getting a sequel. So what do I care?
Like, yeah, no.
I kind of forgot all about it.
It, you know, and there's plenty of people that love it that are not right wingers at all. But like right wingers, kind of like tried to grab ownership of the movie because I want to say it had to do with they wanted to prove it could outdo Captain Marvel, which it did not even fucking.
No, not even close.
And I think the idea was there is to put what's her name in her place,
Brie Larson.
Yeah, because apparently she's too mouthy for them, or I don't know. I know these are the facts I know.
That
right wingers do not like Captain Marvel. They did not like her because she probably said something bad about Republicans or Trump or something.
She I don't even know if she said anything bad or about Republicans or Trump. She basically said that, you know, she made this movie It stars a woman superhero, and she would just like to see more women critics.
There you go.
reviewing it, because it's a movie that should resonate with them, and most critics are men. And yeah, I do remember all this. There was like these weird online things on 4chan where they were trying to push Alita Battle Angel. Like, let's get it.
Yeah.
I do remember all this now.
I've never had someone explicitly explain to me why a bunch of right wingers loved Alita Battle Angel. I mean, there were, in my opinion, there's some right wing messages in that film, but I just remember it coming out around the time that, you know, Brie Larson had stepped into the culture wars, and they wanted to make a point and see, like, look it, we could have a movie that stars a woman, which it stars like a computer animated fucking woman. I don't know. That movie I hated to begin with, and then to have that group latch itself onto it,
made you dislike it even more.
Yeah,
fair enough.
It's funny too, because there's people like me. I absolutely love Alita Battle Angel, but I fucking hated it to begin with, and then I hated it even more after that. So maybe it's a little unfair, but I'm giving it to Alita Battle Angel.
Fair enough.
And a similar category, biggest disappointment.
So here's where Rambo comes in, and yep. This is going to make Josh happy, because we are again talking about Rambo. But yeah, Rambo Last Blood is a movie that I am super disappointed in. I mean, we reviewed all the Rambos this year. I don't think we loved all of them. But for the most part, they were fun movies. And I remember, and still did when I watched it on for the rewatch, Rambo, which is basically Rambo 4, enjoying that movie. I enjoyed it on the rewatch. I was hoping Last Blood would be something similar, and instead it is a fucking garbage pit of film. I hated every minute of it as well. it is another film, and I gave five films one star this year. It is another one of those, but it's like because I enjoy the Rambo movies, I was looking forward to this one, and to come out of it at, like, hating it as much as I did. And I know you didn't hate it nearly as much, but for me to come out hating it as much as I did, that was a huge disappointment.
The thing about it is, I didn't. When I came out of it, I think I gave it 3 stars when I came out, which is, trust me, wrong. As time has gone on, my estimation of that film has gone nowhere but down, to the point where I now pretty much agree with you and everyone else that it's trash. My biggest disappointment of the year is Rambo Last Blood. It's just, again, it's like you said, like, it's not like you expect great things out of Rambo, but again, you do these movies once every 10 or fucking 20 years. It was an opportunity to maybe do something. Like, hey, yeah, maybe say you have 2 iconic characters you've made. Look how good you've done by Rocky. Maybe you could do something good with Rambo here instead. Oh my God. Like, this thing is like a straight to video.
Look at how he ended like the Rocky franchise, or even how like they expanded on it with Creed and ended that character. And here, instead of like, I mean, it's always had like a weird right wing hint to it, the series, but like, this one is like overt, and like the Mexicans are invading America to come and get their revenge. And then to top it all off, the action is shot in the dark.
That's the thing. It's dark and ugly. Like, and there's not a lot of action. Yeah. There's barely any.
No, it's like, you know, the first 45 minutes of this movie are Sylvester Stallone riding horses and doting on his niece, who then he has to go to Mexico and find. He gets stabbed. Then he spends like the next 20 minutes in a bed, and then the final 20 minutes are like the action, and it's all shot in the fucking dark. Like,
yeah.
Rambo should be wall-to-wall action. Like, that's all you need.
It should be Rambo 2008. At a bare minimum, but also maybe you could have done something where it was the action of that, but somehow has something a little more to say, like the first one did. It was about how we treat veterans or something. I don't know. But
anything I think would have been better than what they delivered with Last Blood. So,
and if you're going to play around on the border, I would hope that you'd have something more interesting to say than this, like that the Mexicans are coming. It's just like, yeah,
it's so bad. It's not even thinly veiled. It's just like overt. Yeah. And it's like,
fuck, I mean, Rambo's not outright racist in it, and he's got some Mexican friends, quote unquote. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just the do something better than any of this. It's just kind of trashy, and like I said, it's dark. You can't see anything. There's barely any action. Probably the only part I thought was actually really cool was when he popped that dude's collarbone out. I was like, holy shit, nasty, you know? Yeah. But yeah, it's a no for me, dog. I'm on your side after much thought. So that's another category we're landing the same on.
All right.
Let's see if we could do it one more time. Biggest surprise.
Biggest surprise. So another series from the 80s. And I went in.
Going, are you even looking at my list?
I don't know. Like, come on, man. Like, after how Terminator has been for years, for nearly two decades.
Oh, is that where you're going here? Okay. All right.
Terminator Dark Fate is my biggest surprise. Like, I had hope, but I came out of that movie going, damn, that was fun. That was a fun fucking movie. I was surprised that they pulled it off, because by God, every Terminator since, like, I'll say 3 was fun to watch, but everything like in between has been garbage. This series looked like it was garbage and toast, and then Dark Fate comes along and it is a fun ride. Enjoyed it pretty much all the way through. So it gave me a pretty big surprise.
Hey, you know me, no disagreement there. I liked it even more than you. And I think that some of the sci-fi ideas in it are deeper than people are giving it credit. But anyways, my biggest surprise is also a series from the 80s making a comeback. That's Child's Play.
Nice.
It's just because, like, even a week out from it coming out, I don't think you or I or anybody thought it would be any good at all.
No, not at all.
And like, I do still kind of think that, like, the doll looks weird that they came up with, but it's like, it's just a huge surprise because it actually is pretty good, and it kind of like charts its own path and it does its own thing. It's kind of completely different from any of the others, but it's still a lot of fun. And I don't know if I'd want them to continue with this or not. I'm just saying, like, this was a nice surprise in the summer, and it couldn't have come from, like, a series that I expected less out of. Like, I just did not expect it to be good at all. So, yeah, that's my choice there.
I'm with you on that. It was great. A ton of fun. Another one you was not expecting to be good. And it's a blast.
When you start talking about 80s, I was like, oh, he chose the same one as me again. Like, nope, there was another one. All right. See if I can get through this. Rest of this episode for taking a break. Coolest/most badass character.
There was only one that came to mind for me, and that was Cliff Booth. That dude just exudes cool. Like, he is the personification of cool.
Yeah, mine is the same choice. I mean, come on. If like, it's like, if we did not have this category already, that's like the kind of thing you would make this category for, is to say Cliff Booth was the most badass. I mean, the dude was just, yeah, he's the cool dude. He's the dude you want to be. Like, dude who is tripping on acid and a bunch of strangers walking in his house with guns, and he just looks at them and laughs. I mean, come on.
God, it's like,
he's got that cool fucking dog. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, I know it's mostly a dream sequence, and it's more a matter of Cliff remembering things the way he wants to remember them. But that whole Bruce Lee sequence is fucking awesome.
A lot of people hated it. I didn't like it at first, too, but rewatching it, I kind of liked the. I just like the part when he's like, you know, using something like, it's called manslaughter. He's like, anyone in his hands could be deadly weapons or some bullshit like that. It's called manslaughter.
And I just love that, like, he has this image of himself as being, like, more cool than Bruce Lee.
And he's just sitting there drinking, like, a chocolate milk.
Yeah. It's not necessarily true, because it's all in his head, because he's fucking standing on his best friend's house, like, fixing his antenna while he's thinking about this. But it's just like, yeah, like, he thinks he's cool, and then, like, he ultimately is really cool. So, I love
that. Yeah, I mean, there's no other, like, if you came up with someone else for that category, I'd be like, that's wrong, because it's
like, what's wrong with you? Did you see this movie?
Yeah. Best score. What do you got?
This one's tough. I did not have nothing really stood out for me for most of the year. And I should note right now, you know, we have not seen some of the big movies. 1917, Star Wars, and I have a feeling that those scores may top whatever I'm about to say here. But what I have for best score is Terminator Dark Fate. Love the reuse of the old themes there, and I think it kind of ebbs and flows well with the action, and does a great job of bringing the movie forward.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Terminator music.
No, it's a great theme.
It was a hard year for me, too, because there weren't a lot of scores that really stuck out to me. The one score that kind of stuck out to me and I almost gave this to was Us, which, of course, does, like, the variation on I Got Five on it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I had to go with The Irishman, which has this really kind of downbeat, almost sounds like a Western type of score, and sometimes it hits these really low cello beats, which is like that. It's not exactly like, I don't think I would listen to it while I was like working out or at work or something. But in the context of the film, the score for The Irishman, I think, works really well. So. Awesome. And it was the only real score that stuck out to me all year. So,
like, outside of Terminator, for me, the only theme all year that has stuck out is not a film theme or anything, but kind of like that main theme from The Mandalorian.
God, I love that song.
I love it. It's great.
And I love going back to The Mandalorian. I love how that show ends with every episode with that theme played against concept art from the episode.
Yeah, the concept art's great.
It's just, it's the type of thing most shows will never show you, and you get to see at the end of every episode their concepts for the show. Best trailer, Chris?
There's been a few, but one that just came out recently. Really kind of has captured me, made me excited for a movie. You know, maybe I was going to go see regardless, but I really felt the vibe of Wonder Woman 84.
Really?
That,
I don't know if I saw that.
That trailer, like it.
Oh, I did, yeah.
It's a ton of fun. And it kind of really brings forth that setting that they're going for. 1984, obviously. It's something that's like, yeah, I was going to see the new Wonder Woman sequel regardless, but yeah, that one was like, that made me excited for it, and that doesn't happen too often.
You know what? I'm going to stick with my original choice on this. I was thinking of landing on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which has a fantastic trailer, but I feel like we've just given so many awards to that movie. So I'm going to give it to Joker, which that trailer sold that movie as an adult film that was kind of like an homage to early Scorsese, you know, specifically like Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy. And it really made me hope that the movie was going to be something on that level, which it wasn't, but the trailer sold me on it, so that's why I'm gonna give it to Joker. Like, nice. It got me hyped as hell for a movie that turned out to be okay. Yeah. Moving along. Best doc.
Well, so anybody that's listened to the show knows I'm not a huge fan of documentaries. Jeff has expanded me a little bit here. But I honestly did not watch a ton of documentaries this year. So looking over my viewed list, I only watched like maybe three or four all year. And on my rankings, Fire, which was the Netflix Fire Fest documentary.
Yeah.
It was right there with the other, whatever the Hulu one was. They kind of go hand in hand.
I can't remember which one I liked more now. But yeah,
okay. I literally have them back to back. Fire Fraud was, I think, the Hulu one. But I'm gonna go with Fire. That, like, what a fucking shit show that festival was. And I love that both these documentaries kind of point that out.
It was fun to watch the story of how that shit happened too.
I should note that I have three docs kind of back to back to back on my list. It was the two Fire movies, and then I don't, maybe I should let you go, but Horror Noir was number three on mine. So
Horror Noir I liked a lot. I didn't think about that for this category, just because there's basically been one thing for me in this category all year.
Yep.
And there's been some stuff I watched recently trying to catch up, and there's actually a few things I still need to watch. There's one called For Sama. It's supposed to be really great, and it's available for free on YouTube. But the one that's always stuck with me all year is Knock Down the House, which is the documentary that follows, like I said, a bunch of people running for office back in 2018. I'm not going to go too deep into it because we're going to be talking about the film more, and including next week probably. Spoilers. But I think the best type of documentary follows people around and catches something as it's happening, and this is one of those. Best dialogue, Chris.
Best dialogue. I have Knives Out here.
How dare you?
I just love the banter back and forth between all the characters. I think they're all, everybody in that film has excellent lines throughout. In a lot of ways, it reminded me of, you know, if Kevin Smith in his prime had made kind of like a Clue like movie, because that's kind of what it felt like. But I think Rian Johnson does a great job with Knives Out, and the dialogue just really works, and it brings out those characters. And if that didn't work, then the rest of the movie does not work at all.
I think that would be a good choice if not for a certain other movie that's hanging out around there. And that is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I mean, come on, dude.
There's some great lines in there.
It's not, you know, Tarantino is usually known for like very flashy kind of dialogue and long extended monologues from characters and stuff. Like, this plays more like a normal movie.
It's weirdly restrained for him.
There's so many fucking fantastic lines and shit in it. The part where Brad Pitt picks up the girl and he's driving her, and she asks if he wants a blowjob, and he says no, and she's like, "Why? How old are you?" And he's like, "Too old to be going to jail for poontang." Like, you know, there's one right there. The part where DiCaprio loses his mind in his trailer, and he's like, "8 goddamn fucking whiskey sours. You're fucking miserable drunk." He's yelling at himself. This part at the end, when after everything has happened, dude is asking him through the gate, like, "Is everyone all right?" And DiCaprio goes, "Well, the hippies aren't. That's for goddamn sure." And it's just like, again, so it's not like why you would usually pick Tarantino's dialogue as the best. It's more kind of normal, but it's just, there's so many quotable lines in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that I couldn't go with anything else other than that. I'll give Knives Out. It has good dialogue. I like Daniel Craig probably the best in that
too. He's great.
But then he doesn't speak for a while. He just sits in the background and hits the piano key.
Flipping his coin, hitting the piano key. Yeah. It's great.
All right. We got a couple more categories to bang out. Might as well just do it. Most overrated.
I'm going to get everyone angry at me here, but I'm going Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, you don't got me mad. I'm fine.
No, but our some of our listener base is not going to be happy with that. Look, I came out of that film liking it a lot. I still think it's a likable movie. And what it does, what it accomplishes is you know, it's kind of astounding. It's a season ending finale for a 20 plus film movie franchise. But I don't know, people are treating it like it is fucking God's gift to filmmaking. And I think in some ways it's a little bit of a muddled mess, and it's certainly not as great as a lot of people want you to believe. So yeah, overrated. My opinion of it has certainly come down as well on it, but Avengers Endgame.
I didn't like it either, but I didn't even like it as much as you. So.
No,
I don't like Marvel. I'm just gonna leave it at that. My most overrated. I was thinking about going with Ford versus Ferrari. Just because of, like, I still don't get why everyone seems to, like that movie. But
it's a weird thing, right? Like,
everyone seems to like it. I went and saw it with an open mind. It did nothing for me at all. But mine, I'd go with something that got, like, way higher praise and way more overhyped and ended up not being that great, and that was Joker. That movie got overrated as shit. Standing ovations and blah, 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 blah at the fucking film festival, getting like these 10 like scores and shit. No, dude. Nowhere near that good. Did I lose you, Chris?
Yep. Yep. No. I heard most of that, but what was the film?
Joker.
Joker. That's what I thought you were talking about, but you cut out for a second there.
So. Okay. Joker, it was Joker. Yeah. Let me be clear. Joker got overrated as fuck.
I agree with that.
And then when the actual film came out and people got to see it, and more critics that didn't just see it at the film festival got to review it, it came crashing down to reality, and I wish it had been there in the first place. I got my hopes up for something that just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfectly fine. But I think you kind of said it's attempting to be Scorsese, but it has no depth to it at all. Like there's nothing there. It's like somebody imitating Scorsese. Like, and
yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having it, of course, to tie it to some comic book shit. So fuck it. I don't know.
Yeah. So, two comic book movies and are overrated. Yeah,
most overrated. Covered our bases. We got DC and Marvel, man.
Yep.
Most underrated.
Most underrated. I'm going with Fighting With My Family.
Okay, I can see that.
I feel that this category is one where we can kind of like champion films that maybe people haven't seen. And I get it. It is a movie about professional wrestlers. But it is a fun family drama first and foremost, I think. And there's some great performances. Florence Pugh's great. Like she is in everything this year. But I think the rest of the actors and that are her family also kind of drive this, and it's a fun movie.
Yeah, I didn't end up liking it as much as you did or some other people I've talked to did, but I liked it. I have zero interest. I don't care about wrestling. You know, I may have when I was very little, but you know, no connection to it anymore. And yeah, I could totally see that. Like, it deserved to be a little more recognized than it.
Yeah.
For me, this category, most underrated, it came down to like two movies. I'm still, like, I still have them both listed on my thing. And I'm like, I think I gotta go with the one that I think is better than even people who like it say, and that is Terminator Dark Fate. I think it's a really nice return to form for the Terminator series.
Yes.
And it just, like, even people that liked it don't kind of give it credit for some of the cool, I think, sci-fi ideas in it. Most people did not see it. Most people stayed home. Which is a damn shame, because it's a good movie. So, yeah, I gotta give it to Terminator Dark Fate. I was also considering Dragged Across Concrete, but I think that movie found its audience that it was going to find anyways, and most people seem to like it. So, yeah, I gotta go with Terminator Dark Fate on it.
Nice.
Best theater audience reaction.
So there were two that I was kind of playing with here, but the one I'm going to go with is the face cave-in scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It is the only movie this year that made me go, oh shit, out loud, which is, like, I try not to talk in movies, and I try not to react, but it is a total holy fuck moment. And the rest of the audience I saw it with felt that as well. I'm not sure if they thought it was holy shit, that's amazing, or if they were holy shit, I am disgusted by this. But it was a full theater reaction to that scene.
Yeah, that's my choice as well. Nothing came close. Like, my theater erupted. Like, me as well. I was clapping and just, like, guffawing, like, ha-ha, oh my god, like, and that's what kind of the, like, yeah. Again, like you said, it's like, I think part of theater was probably like, oh, like, you know, shock reaction like that. But then there were people like us that love the violence that are like, bravo, you know, like, and it's just like, that doesn't happen. Like, that organic reaction does not happen a lot in theaters. And
I think what makes it work so well is you talked about this with the dialogue, is that for Tarantino, it's kind of, it's very restrained. Like, there's a lot of great lines in it, and but the movie itself is kind of normal,
yes,
up until that point, and then this happens, and it's like, what the fuck? it's great,
and it's just, it's rare. Like, you know, Tarantino is a rare gift, because to able, like, my theater was busting up for 2 minutes, just lost their mind, and you don't get that often. And that's what made, like, rewatching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that's when I came up with this category, and I told you on Twitter, I'm like, we're adding best theater audience reaction. Because it's an impossible thing to do. It happens maybe once a year, if that, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that was it this year for sure. Best ensemble.
Oh, another one where I was kind of like back and forth with two. They both came out recently. Ultimately, I'm going to go with Jojo Rabbit here.
Whoa!
Scarlett Johansson, Taika Waititi, Sam Rockwell, Rebel Wilson, Stephen Merchant, all the kids in it. This, everybody in this is clicking. My other option, I'm going to let you go. Let's see where you go with this.
Mine's Knives Out.
Yeah, that would have been my other choice, and I was bouncing back and forth, but I really liked the full cast here, and Jojo Rabbit. So,
yeah, not much for me to say about Knives Out. Just look at that cast; it's an awesome thing.
Amazing.
Like, he assembled, like, to get that, all those people together. But it's just, like, especially, I guess my one note is, like, it's awesome to have Jamie Lee Curtis back. I don't know where you've been, but she's great in this. And I would like to see more of her, but she's just, like, nails her role. She has a great line reading in this where she's like, you little bitch. It's so great. all right, let's wrap up the episode. One final category, and that is best director.
I have a feeling I know where you're going with this. I'm going elsewhere. Maybe not, but I have a feeling. A couple feelings. But I have a feeling you're not going anywhere with this one. I'm going with Rian Johnson for Knives Out. I love what he did here. I love how he kind of subverted the mystery kind of tropes, the way a mystery movie is put on screen. The performances he got out of that ensemble is great. And it was a ton of fun. Had a ton of fun at the movies with that film.
All right, you got me. I was not going in that direction. This was tough for me, but I'm giving it to Martin Scorsese for The Irishman. You know, nothing against Tarantino. Tarantino's won plenty of awards tonight, and he's going to win more. So. But the Irishman, I think Scorsese and his editor, Thelma Schoonmaker, are managing a lot here, much more even than Tarantino was. You know, this is a 3.5-hour film, and you're managing lots of characters. You're managing different decades. You're managing American history. He's playing with new technology in terms of the de-aging stuff. And the fact that all just kind of works and flows and ends up, you know, being this movie that has like this perfect last half hour, this perfect ending. But somehow, you know, for being 3.5 hours, feels maybe 2.5. You're doing something right. And this is a guy who also, at least from the Academy, has never gotten enough credit, in my opinion. So I'm going to give it to Scorsese for The Irishman.
Nice.
As I'm dying. I'll wrap it up for this week. Those are our awards for the best of 2019. We'll be back next week with our picks for the top 10 films of the year.
Yep.
Movie dudes. Do-do-do-do.